This episode is presented by Invest Puerto Rico. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Hello and welcome back to Equity, a podcast about the business of startups where we unpack the numbers and the nuance behind the headlines. Today is April 5th, 2024. My name is Alex and I'm joined today by my dear friend, it's Marianne Azevedo. Marianne, hi, how are you?
Hi, Alex. I'm great. How are you?
Well, I just sat through 2 days of YC Demo Day, which we'll get to in a minute. And so I feel like I've gone through some sort of warp function and my brain has been turned inside out. But I love Demo Days, so I kind of like it.
Well, Becca is on the show with us and you sat in on Demo Days as well, right?
That is true. And I have to say, I never want to hear the term AI again in my life.
bad news, Becca, because that's going to come up a lot on the podcast today. As a three, we're going to break through deals of the week, including the Autism Impact Fund, SESO, and then Home from College. And then we're going to talk about, in our first theme, guess what? It's YC Demo Day, and we're going to not avoid the phrase AI, because if we did, it would be very short. And then we're going to wrap up talking about two IPOs that are coming your way, both from Rubrik and Ibotta, because, oh my gosh, guys, the IPO window may actually be inching open. At last, I can dream. Anyways, but first off, Marianne, we're talking about a new fund here, but it's called the Autism Impact Fund, so I presume we have to do a little bit of explaining.
Well, yes, and I have to preface this by saying this is an instance where I feel a little bit like an investor might, because I first wrote about this fund back in 2021. I think it was November 2021, when they were really just getting off the ground. They hadn't yet closed their fund, but I was so intrigued by the concept. It was not something I'd ever really heard of before. And at the time, their goal was to be the investment and innovation arm of the autism community. So here we are about 2.5 years later, they announced a $60 million fund that surpassed their goal of $50 million. I thought it was awesome. So yeah, I kind of selfishly felt that sort of validation that an investor might when you're like, yes, I knew this was something worth writing about. And, you know, obviously people thought it was worth backing. So enough about me and that. What they do is, as we talked about, their goal is really to help individuals and their families who might already have a family member that has autism or have better detection to determine if someone has autism, treatment, support solutions, things like that. And I think it's really great. Chris Mail is the co-founder managing partner. He decided to start this, I think it was about 2 or 3 years after his own son was diagnosed with autism. And yeah, they seem to be doing a lot of great things already.
What's cool about this is getting 60 instead of 50 sounds relatively modest because it's 10 million, but it's 20% more than they set out to actually raise. And we are seeing other funds come in a little bit shy of where they expected to fundraise. And Marina Timken over on the site for TechCrunch noted recently that we're seeing venture capital inflows from LPs dramatically decelerate. So this fundraise, it's a modest sized first fund, but it definitely beat its expectations. And that's kind of rare these days, Marianne.
It's rare. And I think it's also interesting to note who put money into backing the fund. Limited partners include Uber's CEO, Emergence Capital partners, Brian Jacobs, Bob Nelson, a co-founder and managing director of Arch Venture Partners, but also a lot of institutional LPs such as Fairfield Maxwell and Ferd. So I think that, you know, this attracted a wide range of LPs. And one of the things that Mail said, Chris Mail, the managing partner, was that these aren't just like people who have family members with autism that want to help, you know, or help make things better for their family members or people like them. But no, it's becoming a real business opportunity, which he emphasizes. This is not like a charity. There is business opportunity here in addition to also helping people. And I love that always. Like when we can combine making money with really making a difference in people's lives, I mean, you can't get better than that.
No. And I just want to say that the firm already has 12 portfolio companies and is going to try to raise its next fund in 9 months. So I presume that it's been investing out of this fund before it closed. That happens quite a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they started investing like right away. And actually, they're anticipating some exits or at least one exit within the next 6 months or so. That's pretty impressive.
I absolutely dig it. But I do want to move on because we have lots to get to today. Becca, you picked a company that I am intrigued by, having once worked on a farm.
Oh, well, I'll have to hear more about that at some point. But My ideal of the week is looking at CISO, which is a company that is building software to fix farm workforces and solve agriculture HR woes. The company raised a $26 million Series B round led by Mary Meeker over at Bond, with participation from Index Ventures, NFX, SF Angel, and several CISO customers, which is interesting to note. But what CISO does, it originally started as a platform that automated the H-2A visa process, which is the visa that farms can set themselves up for to bring on migrant workers when they can prove that they cannot hire enough domestic workers to fulfill their harvest needs. And that process is very complicated and also comes with a lot of extra layers that don't come when you hire other types of employees. You are subject to specific types of audits and a specific layer of compliance that is not as common in payroll, as well as just in hiring in general. But they started there and realized that if they got into these farms and they sold to these farms, that they could kind of expand and sort of grow their capabilities from there. And they're now working a lot on payroll, which I have now learned that farm payroll is absolutely wild because the majority of these employees get paid by picking. So you pick a certain amount of cucumbers, you get paid for that amount of cucumbers. If you are a domestic worker, you get paid a different rate than a migrant worker. If they are picking from the same field, it is a third different rate. So it seems complicated. I know the founder and CEO of CISO mentioned that payroll for farming is like the hardest type of payroll to run, which you get founders and entrepreneurs always saying like, oh, we're fixing the hardest problem, or this is such an area. But then he started going into it and I was like, this actually does sound like the hardest, the hardest payroll I have heard of yet. So I just thought it was interesting. Their adoption strategy is also quite interesting because I know a lot of people build agriculture tech or technology for farm and ag in general that doesn't get utilized, that doesn't get bought because they're trying to go from a crawl to run approach as opposed to a crawl, walk, run. And I think that CISO was smart to try to just change the back office, the HR, and they made it very clear that they do not intend to sort of change the farmer in the field with the pen and paper who has done his process for X amount of years.
One of my favorite things about this story, Becca, you did a great job in reporting it, is when the investor talked about a customer call that she had, and the farmer said that a lot of Silicon Valley entrepreneurs would show up at the farm and they would try to tell him how he should run his business. And he would ask them, his quote was, "I always ask each of them to come and spend a day and work alongside me so they can understand what is a day in the life of the end customer." And they never show up. Michael, who is the founder of his company, was the only one who showed up at 4 a.m. in the freezing cold in the dark to pick artichokes. I loved that. I mean, come on.
I know.
That's like dedication. That's like, I am serious about learning about this. And so I really just thought that was awesome.
Yeah, I even double checked with them that it was artichokes because I was like, I would be devastated if that detail was incorrect in the story.
Oh man, farming hours are nuts. My favorite farm experience was driving berry harvesters on the night shift. And if you don't know how berries are grown on farms, they're grown in these incredibly long rows that are, I want to say like 8 feet tall. And a berry harvester straddles them, kind of like an H-shaped thing with wheels on the ground and then a platform on top. Anyways, you drive at like 0.5 miles an hour in a straight line for 12 hours, just waiting for the sun to come up. And that taught me a whole lot about patience and also why I love my current job. All that's to say that farming is freaking hard. And if there's a better way to pay people and save time and hopefully be fair and compensate them better, I'm all here for it. So, Becca, I think this is really cool. And also, it's a big Series B.
It is. Yeah, and I agree. I think anything in the agriculture tech space is interesting. But as I mentioned earlier, the issue is a lot of the tech that gets built, it doesn't matter how cool it is if no one uses it. So it was nice to kind of talk to a company that's like, we're building in this space, we're making a lot of progress, and like farmers actually want to use it. They're used by 27 of the largest 100 agriculture employers in the U.S. already. So, fun to see. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because ag has really concentrated in the U.S. Like the whole idea of like the family farm is, you know, super bygone. It was a while ago, but now it's even more dead. So 27 of the top 100, that's a lot of acreage under their belt.
Sure. Yeah. Names, you know, like Bonnie's and things like that are customers. So it's definitely been able to grow a lot by the time they're raising just the Series B. So just getting out of the early stages, and they're just starting to expand their product offering. So it seems like a company to watch.
I mean, they'll do payments soon enough, right? They're going to go just barely into the fintech world, I'm sure. My deal of the week is a company called Home From College. It's a career platform for Generation Z. Google Ventures, aka GV, just led a $5.4 million seed round into it. Just going back in time, it raised some pre-seed money from Peak Six and Angel Investors. That was $1.5 million before. But the idea here is helping college kids get either early employment, first employment, or gig work on top of their regular jobs. And I think this is super cool. One thing that I think is hard right now is breaking into the workforce. I read a lot of kind of like post-grad forums, and a lot of folks are just struggling to find the right job for themselves or having to kind of like hack their way into their industry. So I think this is super cool. Marianne, you and I are not just out of college, but I think that if this had been around when we were younger, it would have been super cool as an opportunity to kind of pick up some early work.
Yeah, I thought it was a great concept too. Very interesting. My son, when he was about, I think he was 14, when he was desperate to try to find a job himself at 14, and was like calling places and saying, "Do you hire at 14?" And they were all like, "No." but you know, the point is there are a lot of young people, even who aren't yet quite college age, who want to earn money and want to get experience so they can build a resume. So this is, seems like a really great way to find opportunities out there. And yes, this generation is very open to doing things more like freelance contract basis than having necessarily a steady gig. It gives them an opportunity to find a wide variety of different types of jobs. So I think it's a very cool concept. I'm surprised there's not already something out there. Maybe there is. I'm not sure. But yeah, love it.
My one thing with this, as someone who's just slightly closer to having come out of college, the only way this will be successful is if all of these roles are all in the same place. So it sounds like they've already got a bunch of notable names listing jobs on there, like Poppy, Burt's Bees, Urban Decay. But from looking for a job, it's like you had to go on so many different platforms. So it's like, unless they grow at scale where like everyone's listing on there, I feel like this is not going to be a better solution than like Indeed, because it's like you go on Indeed, then you go on Monster, then you go on checking companies individually. So I think this could be really interesting, especially if they are looking to go at it a little bit differently than say an Indeed for a different generation. But that was always my biggest problem, is just that you could never find everything in the same place. So if this doesn't fix that problem, I'm not sure how much of a solution will be.
Yeah, I see your point. But I thought what kind of the differentiator was that they do things like offer like one-time projects, things like that. So it's not just part-time position even or internship, but like, hey, we have a project. We need someone who can build a website and do this. So it's, to me, it's a little more unique in that perspective. So that way people can still get experience and build their resume without committing to like an actual part-time or full-time or whatever type of job, just one-off projects.
Yeah. So I was on the website and I went to their gigs section, Becca, because I was kind of curious about the same thing. What's the density of work here? Is it three things or is it 30,000? And it is, I would say, more varied than I expected, but I think you're right. They're going to have a supply, I'm not going to say problem, but that's going to be something to work on as they grow the business. But in terms of specialization, because I've covered a company called Pangea, I actually met the founder here in Providence. It's one of the few Providence-ish startups so I, of course, covered them as they raised some capital. But they were doing essentially a similar idea, gig-ish work for college kids. The idea was college kids have a lot of experience with digital stuff and businesses need that. Let's connect the two, make some money. Huzzah. They've since had to tailor their offerings, and now they're more focused on the marketing use case. So I think what they did to get around kind of what Becca's outlining is by going more narrow instead of trying to be nice and wide. But in Home From College's column of wins, they do feel like they have a really Gen Z design, and I do not mean that as a pejorative. So I can kind of see this feeling very welcoming to Gen Z folks and probably brands that want to reach them as well. So one to watch, with 5 million more, they can definitely spin up some more offerings on their site. I'm just going to be curious to see how big it can get and if Gen Z is only the freelance generation because corporate America has broken the loyalty compact with workers over the years and now treats them like tissue paper. Which we don't have time to talk about today on the show, Marianne. Sad to say, but good news is right after this incredibly short break, we're going to dig into all things YC. We just sat through 6 hours of several hundred pitches, and we have notes and news for you. What's next in tech? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's an innovations paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/TechCrunch. All right, Becca, you and I have what I call accelerator brain, which means that we just sat through dozens, if not hundreds, of pitches, and they've all kind of fuzzed in my head. But I'm curious, first takeaways from the trends you noticed in this YC batch.
Well, the obvious trend would be AI. And what did we count? There is like 86 AI companies, or more than 80, and then over, well over half the batch used AI or talked about it in their pitch.
It depends on how you count.
Yeah.
Many, let's say.
There's a lot of AI, but within that, there were a couple of trends that were particularly interesting. There were three or four companies looking to do AI for dental office automation for booking appointments specifically, which one, feels very specific. Two, I don't know if people want that. And three, it's kind of crazy. Like, I get, of course, YC brings in so many companies. They want to invest in the trends of the day. They are, of course, going to invest in companies that have some overlap. But this was one of the cases where I was like, these companies are doing the exact same thing, which is interesting. And there was another category, too, in that realm. A lot of companies trying to use AI to make presentations easier, which I thought was so odd because presentations are not difficult to make necessarily. So I thought that was interesting that some of the themes of some areas that, like, the dentist office feels so random that there are so many companies targeting it. And presentations also just feels very random.
Okay, I want to defend the dentist thing before we move on, because I have big thoughts about this. But do we need four companies in one YC batch to do this? Probably not. But think about it this way. Lots of dentist offices, you have to go in every X months to have them scrape your teeth and critique your flossing. So there's a recurring amount of inflow and outflow of calls, right? They have huge customer bases. No one answers their phone. No one likes text messages. And the dental office does not want you to miss an appointment because it means unutilized equipment and staff time. So it's actually quite lossy on the accounting side. And because we've decided for some reason that teeth are not part of health, they're an entirely separate insurance category. So there's an entirely separate industry there to sell into, and dentists make money. So they have money, location, and need. And we all hate phone calls. I can kind of see it.
Called ZocDoc.
What's ZocDoc?
ZocDoc was a New York startup. You use it to find and book doctors from anything, therapists to dentists to eye doctors to specialists. If they specialists need a referral, it'll tell you that. All that kind of stuff is in the app.
Marianne, does ZocDoc exist in Texas?
I mean, it probably does. I've never used it. I mean, I don't know. All this just reminds me how I got really upset a few months ago when I canceled my dentist appointment 3 days in advance and got chastised by my dentist's office, who I'd been going to for 10 years, lecturing me about it. Can AI help with that?
AI cannot make people nicer. No.
Right. But I would also like to comment on the presentation thing. I mean, to me, that just sounds like one of the worst ideas I've ever heard. I mean, a good presentation should be authentic, should reflect the person who's giving the presentation, how they are, their personality, their passion. If you have AI do it, it's going to be exactly what it is, like a robot giving a presentation. I hate that idea. Sorry, company, whoever you are, I could be wrong. I didn't see your presentation. I wasn't there for all the demo days like you two were. I can imagine you probably got so sick of hearing AI, AI. But one notable thing that I think we should also mention is that you didn't hear a lot of crypto.
No, which is something I thought was definitely interesting. There was one crypto company today that was trying to do like TurboTax for crypto, which I thought was actually kind of interesting. But I almost made a note of that in the channel because we've definitely seen VC interest in crypto has gone up this year. So usually YC stuff generally pretty much aligns with what early stage VCs are interested in at the moment. And it did feel absent that there are no crypto companies in here for the fact that VCs have definitely shown they are more interested in that space again this year. So I did notice that yesterday and then looked and saw there was going to be one today, but just one.
Yeah. Wow. And also, if you go back to the latest YC request for startups, we talked about it on this show. This was back in mid-February. There was actually notably a request for companies working on stablecoin finance. So even though there weren't a lot of crypto companies in this YC batch, to Becca's point about venture interest picking back up, we might see more in the next one because they are talking about it, at least at the higher levels of YC.
And I don't mean to say that we watched all this YC and thought all of the ideas were repetitive. There were definitely some stuff in there that I thought was particularly interesting. Like, there was a company that went today called Garage that I thought was fascinating because they are trying to operate a marketplace for used firefighting gear, which I did a little Googling when we were on the YC call because I was like, I don't know how much that stuff costs. And found out that on average, a typical, like, nothing crazy, no high tech outfit for a firefighter is over $3,000. Wow. And a truck can cost over $1.5 million.
Oh,
so it's
my
like
goodness.
If you're a small town and you have volunteer firefighters and you want them to be safe, like, this is a huge cost. So I'm like, that is a genius idea to have like a used gear marketplace for that. So like,
that
it's crazy. I put in my little blurb, sometimes the best ideas seem like the most simple, the most obvious, but no one was doing it.
Agreed. Love that.
Also, that if I recall that pitch correctly, that founder said, I was a firefighter for years and then I worked in private equity for Goldman Sachs. I was like, what?
Talk about that, range.
Yeah, talk about range. I mean, like, my career is like, well, I did journalism there, then I did journalism here. That's all as right. far as I've gone. Like, I felt pretty freaking one-dimensional. I'll throw out some more of my faves from today. This is just from the second day of pitches. I thought Lantern was cool. They're doing a Postgres vector search tool. I am learning more about vector search from different founders because I know it's really important in the world of AI. And I think Lantern is kind of in the picks and shovels side of the AI boom. They're going to sell tools to people that are doing AI stuff. And I think that's a great way to approach the market. I also really like Pythagora because it's like, hey, prompt it and it'll make an app for you with code. So I downloaded Visual Studio Code. I downloaded Pythagora. Then I had to download other things that I had to install on my work computer. Sorry, Yahoo IT department. And I'm partway through making an app that's a calculator, but then I ran out of time and then we had the podcast. But I love things that seem to make people who are non-developers more powerful and more capable. And I thought that was just a really cool thing because it can write code fast, turns out. So maybe in the future, we can all do this without having to go to, wait, what's been the theme this YC? Dropping out of Stanford's CS department, I think was the thing I heard the most.
Oh, really? How funny.
Oh, yeah. The dropout was crazy. And our colleague made a great point that it's frustrating to hear that when you have a kid who like didn't get into schools, probably because these kind of kids took their spot.
Oh, I never even thought about that.
I had never thought about it like that. And I was like, wow, that is a good point, actually.
Yeah.
I brought up on this show a couple of times that Stanford didn't let me in after letting in both my sisters. So I'm not bitter at all about Stanford and people dropping out. But I mean, in their defense, I can see the economics behind it.
Oh, yeah, that piece of it, sure.
Okay, Marianne, any last comments on this YC batch? We have lots of posts on the site about it, favorites from both days. I had a great time.
Yeah, I think there sounds like cool stuff. I mean, on the theme of more, I guess, altruistic work, Kyle picked as a favorite a company called GiveFront that serves as a banking platform for nonprofits. Again, I really love it when these two worlds collide, when you're just really showing that, you know, you can make money. I'm not saying this company is showing that, but showing that there are opportunities to combine doing good and making money. So that stood out to me.
Yeah, I'm just going back to my post next. I want to call these companies out. I also liked Buster. I liked Vector View. And I think I picked another one. Oh, yeah. Soundry and Sonata are both interesting in the AI music world. I have lots of thoughts about that, but we don't have time. And then eggnog.ai is supposed to be like the YouTube for AI made videos. I played with their tool. I prompted. I made images and then it turned into a video. And it turns out that I am not the next Steven Spielberg.
Better to find out now.
I know. I almost changed careers. And then I was like, no, wait, I have no talent and no taste. All right, let's move away from the youngest companies in the world, the YC companies out there raising their pre-seed and seed rounds. And let's go instead to the very end of the startup lifecycle curve. We have, Becca, amazingly, two IPOs to talk about. I'm beyond excited.
I know. It's interesting to think about these two IPOs because everyone was dissecting Reddit and Astera Labs. And then, of course, we have more. We are not getting, I think what I'm trying to get is we're not getting a clear picture of what will go public. Because people were like, well, if Reddit's going public, it means this type of company is going to go public this year. And then Astera Labs was not a similar company in any way.
No.
And then you look at Rubrik and you look at Ibotta. Ibotta's profitable. It's over 10 years old. Rubrik is not over 10 years old. Rubrik is not profitable. And it's like, we're getting a whole mix. We're getting marketing from Ibotta. We're getting AI. We're getting social media. We're getting, it's kind of interesting. It's like, it definitely doesn't help people who are trying to predict what happens next. I will say that.
No, for sure. But it's kind of like one of those like Halloween candy bags you get when you reach in and you're hoping for Snickers and you get Milky Way instead. And you're like, ah, they got me again. Big candy. Because the way that I think about this is Rubrik is the real IPO test that we've been waiting for. Because Astera Labs is profitable, growing, caught part of the AI boom on the hardware side. then Reddit is this super well-known brand. It was losing less money. It had an AI story to pitch as well. Okay, fine. And then Rubrik is more traditional unicorn-y, if that makes sense. It's very unprofitable, but it has a very interesting growth story. And so, you know, both sides of the coin. It's been pivoting from selling permanent licenses to its software to a cloud model. So it's talking about ARR growth and net retention. But as everyone knows, when you swap from a perpetual license business model to subscription, there is a period of time when your revenue growth stalls because you're swapping out revenue from one bucket to the other. And that's where they're at. So the question is, what do public market investors think of a company that is not growing very much overall, but has a growth business on the subscription side and sticky losses? And what's it worth? And I think that's going to tell unicorn founders really what the markets are like today for the average, more normal company, if you will.
Yeah, I was surprised just how large the losses were for the company, because I've been reporting on some companies over the past year or so that are actually profitable. But yeah, IPO is like nowhere near, you know, something that they're thinking about. So I thought, okay, I mean, that's a lot of confidence. I'm not saying that they shouldn't have filed to go public, but I was just a little surprised by the numbers.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting about these two companies too, that I think is something you could use to tie them together as a sign of what's to come, is Rubrik last raised money at a $3.3 billion post-money valuation in 2019. Obviously, we don't know how they're going to price yet, but if you look at secondary data trading, their platforms like Caplite predict them that their valuation is probably around $6.3 billion. They're getting a bunch of bids for 6.5 and higher, which means they're getting bid way over, of course, they're getting valued way over their last primary round, which of course a lot of companies at this stage cannot say at the moment. Wow. And then you have Ibotta, which they haven't raised money in a couple of years. Their last valuation was a little over $1 billion. But what's interesting about them is they've since grown their enterprise side a lot and have become profitable, and their revenue is growing like an extreme amount per year. Their revenue was up 52% in 2023 compared to the year prior. And so they're probably going to price way above their last primary round, if I were to guess, even if they do it conservatively, just because they now have way better numbers, way better growth, et cetera. And I think that is something that late stage companies can take away from these two IPOs that is similar, is that while Reddit ended up popping and going over its last valuation, it wasn't originally priced that way, and it's traded as it has. Whereas these two companies, they are likely to price above their last rounds, which is something to keep in mind.
Yeah. And if you're like, why would Rubrik be worth 2x if it's losing money? Well, just keep in mind that if you are spending a lot of money to transform your business and still grow at the same time, that's kind of okay if people think that you have a long-term growth trajectory ahead of you. So thinking, call it 6 billion, the company did just over 600 million revenue last year, 10x, a little bit less if you kind of price in this year's growth. So I don't know, 8, that's not insane. It's a little pricier than I think some stuff is out there in the public markets right now, but we're far from the realm of unreason, if that makes sense. So even with this possible up-priced IPO, the company is still kind of within the current norms, which I think is bullish. It just shows that, you know, like you can still go out in today's market and do fine. You're just not going to get 30x ARR like you might have back in 21. But, you know, that's now 3 years ago. 2021 is now increasingly far back in the old rearview mirror. So I think these are very encouraging. Becca, for folks, though, who are annoyed that we're talking about IPOs again, I'm hoping these aren't the last two. I'm hoping we annoy them more. What's your thought about the kind of future crop of IPOs after we get through these two?
You know, it's hard to decide because traditionally, of course, election years are lower for IPOs and no one wants to kind of go out, especially in those last final weeks of like the election cycle. So it's the end of Q1, or we're already in Q2. These two companies haven't priced. These two companies haven't started trading. That gives people a short window between when these companies go out and when we do hit that kind of like election cycle period. So I know talking with a couple of people, they were like, well, if these things go well, I think we might see more IPOs in like Q4. They were like, it probably a lot of companies, even if they like what they're seeing now and they're thinking about going public this year, a lot will sit out until after the election. So it is interesting to think about, because it's like if they do well, you would assume more would come out now. But the timeline is starting to get a little crunched. So maybe we'll see a few more, but I don't know how many we'll see just because of the election coming up.
You know what's crazy? It feels like we've been in an election for the last 10 years.
Literally. It literally has been. You are correct.
But when you phrased it like that, it made it feel very real in a way that it hadn't before, because it feels like it's always been happening. I don't know.
Yeah, it hasn't hit me.
Well, election year or not, we're going to have both of our eyes glued to upcoming S1 filings because we're optimistic, or at least hopeful, that we're going to see more total companies going out. And just don't forget, there are more than 1,000 unicorns out there in the world that do need to find liquidity of some sort, hopefully today, if not tomorrow, if you're an investor. So we could see more S1s even during an election year.
Absolutely.
On that incredibly positive note, we got to go. This, of course, is Equity. And I'm joined today by my friends, Marianne and Becca. Becca, of course, is also on the Found podcast. Becca, please give yourself a generous plug.
If people like hearing about the stories behind the startups from the founders who build them, Found is the perfect place for you. We have companies that have just launched come on the show, as well as companies that are further along in their journey, like Klarna, Thrive Market, Brex. So you can kind of get a little bit of anything on there. We go across sector. So if you are a sector specific type of person, we've probably interviewed someone for you. So definitely feel free to check it out if you are interested in how people build all these startups we talk about on Equity.
Awesome.
It's a really great show. And of course, Equity comes out Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays with the occasional interview mixed in when we have extra time. We are Equity Pod over on X and Threads. And if you want to keep up with all things from the TechCrunch Podcast Network, we are TechCrunch Pods over on TikTok. We're out of here. We're back on Monday morning. We'll see you then. Bye.
Bye.
Equity is hosted by myself, Alex Wilhelm, and TechCrunch senior reporter, Marianne Azevedo. We are produced by Teresa Loconsolo with editing by Kel. Bryce Durbin is our illustrator, and a big thank you to the audience development team and Henry Picavet, who manages TechCrunch audio products. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.